We've been talking about traction, and indeed I'm concerned because of the fact that I think hopelessness is the word that I see in people, whether it be government, school, whatever, it's hopelessness. And when you see that, you go, well, why? Well, because I got the energy, but I'm not going anywhere, and I'm getting tired of that. I'm getting tired of having habits I cannot break. I don't know about you, but growing up in the church, you see people come in and they've got these issues, and 10 years later, they've got these issues, and 10 years later, they've got these issues. They never solve these issues, and they always have these issues. They say, well, it's just, that's how I am. I thought we need to be people who can change and get some traction, actually do something different in life. And so what I want to do tonight is talk about something I think that's somewhat simple. Albert Einstein, one of the guys that should have been a model, basically said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And I think that's true. I think we need to work at making some of the very complex things simpler. Now look, Christianity is too much like the tax code. It shouldn't be. It should be simpler than that. You know, the tax code comes, and I'm telling you, I quit doing taxes. And it's not that I don't pay them, I have my wife do them now. Because, you know, I used to just sit at the desk going, I have a master's degree in education, I don't know what they just asked. You know, I am not sure, why did they make this so complicated? I understand money a little bit, you got money, you give money, why don't they just tell me how much they want? I would be glad to give it to them. Just tell me. You know, well, how come we can have, when we talk about health care? I mean, our nation passed something in health care that most people couldn't even read. I will bet that most people still don't know what's in that bill. Why? It's too complicated. Do you realize how complicated we make life? I mean, when you start doing things that you shouldn't do, you get more complicated. It's like Jesus, when God said to the people of Israel, I give you 10 commandments, boom, give you 10. And then we took it and made the Talmud out of it. In other words, we wanted to make sure you understood all the men. And we just made it bigger. And then Jesus is walking through a field one day, and he's picking grain, and he got accused of breaking the Sabbath. He's like, wait a minute, I wrote that. I know what it means. So do we. We have 13,000 pages to explain it to you. It's like, you made that way too complicated. You see, I think life is pretty simple, and I've said this before, I think marriage is simple. I think dying to myself is what's hard, but once I do that, marriage is simple. You see, I think that so many times what happens is we make things more complicated than they should be. When I have problems in my home, when I have problems in my marriage, I need to look at me. I'm usually the problem. You see, that's not hard to figure out. Now, I've been so good at masking it and hiding it that I don't even notice it. And certainly, I would rather blame somebody else for my problems. I would. And certainly, there are times probably someone else had something to do with it. I'm sure. But see, I need to, as a teacher, I have a rule. There are no bad teachers. There are no bad students, only bad teachers. And I tell that to myself because of the fact that, look, if I pour my heart out to you this weekend and you don't get it, then I didn't say it right. You know, I got to go back and figure out how to do it different. And if I'm a student, if I'm sitting where you are right now, I have another rule. No bad teachers, only bad students. Because what I want to do is make it simple, and I want to be the one that takes responsibility for what's not working. And if I'm teaching and it's not working, then I got to figure it out. I remember when I first started teaching fifth grade, I went to a school district in Illinois, and they had 5 fifth grades, and I was one of the teachers. All the rest of the fifth grade teachers were very experienced. I was just coming out of Wheaton, football, hockey, you know, came there, and they thought they'd play a trick on me. I got every kid in the fifth grade that had some kind of problem. Every single one of them. And not only that, this school was one that was a branch for deaf children, and I got all of them too. And they gave me 2 like really good girls, and the rest were like all over the place. And I thought, well, this is interesting. I can even remember once in the middle of my first year, the principal came in and asked me for somebody. And he said, where is this guy? And I said, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, you got them coming in and out of here so fast, going to different things, that I don't know where they are half the time. And he just laughed and walked out. It's like, yeah, no. I mean, you got them all. And I thought, man. And I backed off and I said, okay, what's the problem here? What really is the problem? Because I got to reach these kids. That's my job. It isn't my job to say they're bad kids. It isn't my job to say this is a hard situation. My job is to try and figure out how I can impart to them what I'm supposed to. You know, when I switched from all the complicated, I could have given you thousands of pages of why I couldn't do my job. Or I could have said, I don't know, I guess I got to figure it out. And when I said I got to figure it out, you know what happened? The second year, the teachers got together, you know, they choose who's going to go in my classroom, and they were kind of laughing. They said, well, I guess you're here. We can't stick you again. I said, please do. I said, I want all those kids again. No, you don't. I said, yes, I do. You wouldn't believe what a great year it was. I mean, I had to figure out, I know kids were hanging from the chandeliers and stuff, but I had to figure out how to communicate with these kids. And I'd like that challenge again. And it was absolutely wonderful, the 3 years I spent teaching. And by the end of it, I loved the kids. I hated that process of education, but I loved the kids. And so I stayed with them. You see, I think we need to begin to simplify things in life. That's why I can tell adults that what they need to do, if they want their kids to have a better education, is be better parents. See, I can do that. Why? Because I just simplified the whole thing. There are other factors, I'm sure, but that's the main one. Let's get that one right. Jesus said this, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." That's pretty plain and simple. In other words, you need to love God completely. That's what you're about. "And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater commandment than these." So when Jesus was asked, what's important? He did not give us even 10 commandments. In fact, if you look at the 10 commandments, they're about these two things. So he didn't even give us the 10 commandments. He said, let me just simplify this whole thing for you. Love God. Love people. Any questions? That's what I made you to do. I did not make you to do something you cannot do. I made you to do something you can do. Why are you making this so difficult? Why are you making all these laws and rules and regulations? And why are you doing that? Spend time loving me. Now, what's interesting is we need to go to the Bible and see what he means by that. Because when you and I talk, we have our own understanding of words. And our cultural understanding of words, his understanding of what he said might be somewhat different. I don't know. But what we want to do is kind of look at what he meant by that. It's really kind of simple. If you're going to love God, what does he say? If you love me, you do what? You keep my commandments. Okay, so what happens is people think, if I keep his commandments, I love him. Only that's not what he said. He said it in the other order. The next book I want to write is on order. Because I think that once we get certain things out of order, we can't understand them. And it's not okay to flip-flop things. It really isn't. It's not okay to say, if I keep God's commandments, I love him. That's not true. Because you can write the whole Talmud, you can write all the rules up and keep them and not love him. But what is true is this. If you love him, you'll keep his commandments. See, the order matters. That's all. Order matters in so many things. But that's one of them. And by the way, it doesn't say that if you love Dave Wager, you'll keep his commandments. You notice the Bible didn't say that anywhere. You know why? Because people and God are different. See, God's not going to make a mistake. He is always going to choose what's right. He is always going to make the right call. He is always going to do what's right. You can count on him. As I tell the kids all the time, I've told you, he's older than you and smarter than you. He loves you. You can trust him. So when God says something, you've understood your position as a child of the king, if you are one, and you respond in a way where you listen to him, and therefore what you have done is you've shown love to God. That's how you do that. And then it's love your neighbor as yourself. See, now that's kind of simple too. I make sure that my bills are paid, I get to eat and, you know, all that stuff. And I need to make sure that, you're taken care of too. I need to start thinking of you, not me, all the time. See, I'm made to do that. You know what's really interesting? When I just pay attention to those two things, when I spend time loving God and I spend time loving people, I get all kinds of traction. Stuff happens. You know, let me go through something with you here. I want to talk about the good traction that comes when we constantly adjust to the environment around us. You can't always do things the same. Snow tires, you know, work in snow. They don't work well at 90 degrees on dry pavement. If there's snow, I like snow tires. I had a Honda Civic, and my Honda Civic was great. I loved it. I get 40 miles a gallon, that kind of stuff. But what I did is I bought rims, and I bought snow tires for it. And in the winter, I would take on any four-wheel drive. It worked fine. It really did. Now, my daughter has it in Milwaukee, and she's got this condo where she goes up this real steep hill, and they never, I mean, when it snows, she can't even get up it. She had a four-wheel drive, she can get up it. That Honda gets up it. You know why? Because I went down there and changed the tires for her to snow tires during the winter. Here's what a lot of guys tell me. Just get all weather. All weather tires are not really good in snow, and they're not really good on dry pavement. They're kind of good, like, in between everything. But if you want really good traction, you want different tires for different environments. And the reason we came up with all weather stuff is because we don't like changing them. When I was a kid, we changed. I don't know if you remember, some of you are old enough to remember, man. My dad, you know, rear wheel drive cars, had the two snow tires in the car, in the garage, studded in Chicago. Came time, Dave, go put the tires on. Jack the car up, put the snow tires on there, and all of a sudden you heard all the neighbors with the studded tires going down the street until they made them illegal. But they knew something. You get the right tire with the right environment, you can travel on snow. I don't mind traveling. I do a lot of traveling, and one of the things I talk to our staff about are the guys that give me the cars. Like, you make sure the tires are good. Why? I want them good. I'm an old man that does not need to be sitting on the side of the road. I would like to know that they're going to grip when things get rough. You see, I spend time on it, just understanding. I need to adjust to the environment. If I don't adjust to the environment, you cannot say, in life, I'm always going to do this. You cannot do that. You must look at what's going on around you and be able to adjust to it. Things change. Love is actually intentionally adjusting your life. So here's what I understand about loving one another. What I am doing is looking at you, and I am constantly thinking about what I need to do. Like a school teacher, I am constantly thinking, what do I need to do to reach you? Because I didn't reach you yet. And my human inclination is to say, I gave it my best shot. It's up to God. It's not my problem. When I should be saying, like Paul, I beg you, I plead with you, I exhort you, please. See, what do I need to do really in life to live the way I was intended to live? And that's really continually look out for those that are around me. Actually getting traction means that we understand irrefutable laws. In other words, when you're traveling down the highway and it's below freezing and there's water on the ground, it's going to freeze. And you can say, oh no, not today. It's like, do you know the law of freezing or whatever it is? You know, 32 degrees, boom, ice. Yeah, well, the road's, okay, when the road is 32 degrees, ice. Now, yeah, we can put salt on it, and I understand that. But see, there's some laws that you're not going to change. By the way, you can hate them, you can wish they weren't there, but you're not going to change them because they're there. So what do I have to do? I have to adjust to them, whether I like it or not. The car, you know, I drive, it's like moron proof or something, because you're driving it and all of a sudden it goes, bing, warning, it could get icy. No kidding. I know that. Why? I'm telling you about a law that I know. You know, in life there's the law of gravity. You know, it doesn't matter whether you like it or don't like it, you're going to abide by it. You say, no, I don't know if I care for the law of gravity. Really? Who cares? You're going to abide by it. Now, you know what? Not only are laws important, these irrefutable laws, not only are they important to know, but what's really interesting is these irrefutable laws really allow us to do a lot of things once we know what they are. For example, I'm not into airplane pilot flying. I'm not into flying, all right? But people are. There's engineers and all that stuff. And what they do is they count on certain things. They count on, you know, lift and all that. They count on it. Why? There's irrefutable laws that they count on. And things, if this does this, then they can count on it. I understand that. So we adjust to it. What's really interesting to me is how many people know what God says, know what His Word says, and then we try and change the irrefutable laws that God gives us. And then we try and live within that. So it's like me saying, I really don't care that you think there's gravity. I'm going to fly. I'm going to go up to the top of the Sears Tower and jump off, and I will fly. I can tell you, yeah, I'm going to have fun for a few seconds. And then I'm going to splat. Because there's an irrefutable law that I did not pay attention to. Or that I thought was not that meaningful. Or I thought I could get around it. Now I encourage you to think in these terms, because there aren't very many of those. There aren't very many irrefutable laws. But the ones that are. And I just gave you a couple. God says that you and I were made to love Him and love each other. You will never be okay. You will never be satisfied till you do that. Because that's how He made you. And there is no other way to get around it. And if you're not doing it, I promise you this, you're miserable. Because you're trying to find meaningful life. You're trying to find purpose. You're trying to find peace apart from the irrefutable laws that God gave us. If I can use the word law. I mean, whenever you use the word laws, all this grace guys go, you know, I don't like those things. But I'm not using it in terms of legalism. I'm using it in terms of law, gravity, that stuff. It's just the way it is. And we were made a certain way. Let me go through some laws with you. I'm going to give you three laws tonight. I think there are three laws that I think you need to know. And I'm not sure if you've ever heard them before, anything else, but they're maybe I even made them up. You know, I don't know. But I'm trying to put into words some things that are, like gravity or whatever in our physical realm. Because truth destroys the resistance, laws provide the traction. You see, for example, the skis that I got stuck on a snowmobile, I need to get that moving. See, the truth can help me get that moving, and then the laws of physics will give me the traction to get out of there. So I want to know the truth, and I want to know the laws within the truth. I want to know gravity, and then I can harness gravity for something good. I want to know all that stuff so I can harness it for good. You know, let me show you. First law, I call the law of liberty. It's a law of liberty. 1 Corinthians 8:4. Therefore, as to eating of the food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence, and that there is no God but one. You know, it's real interesting here. I don't know, in a little background, you know, there used to be a time where people would offer meat, they would offer animals to sacrifice to idols. And the idols were nothing, and the meat really was nothing. Everything was nothing about this. I mean, when you look at it, the meat was nothing, the idols were nothing, 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 nothing. However, that meat, if you look in the Bible, and here's what you would have to ask, every time you see that God talks about the meat offered to idols, He condemns those who eat it, even though He says it's nothing. So you have to start asking, wait a minute, why? What is the condemnation here? It's not about the meat. It's not even about the idols. What's the problem? Well, you know, in fact, it says in 1 Corinthians 8, food will not commend us to God. We are no worse off if we do not eat. We are no better off if we do. So he says with the meat, it's nothing. In fact, if you look at what the Apostle Paul says, he says, you know what? Let's say you went to somebody's house and they offered you meat and they didn't tell you where it came from. Eat it! However, if they say where it came from, and it came from sacrificing to idols, don't eat it. Boy, that's confusing. You mean the meat's evil? No, the meat's nothing. Okay, I'm confused. I'm not supposed to eat the meat, even though it's nothing, and the idols are nothing. But let me explain this to you a little bit. See, what happened then is people actually were caught up in idol worship, and they were offering meat to idols. I mean, that's what they did. And there were some of them who were still just caught in that whole system. They're caught in this idolatry. They were caught in the system. They may have become believers, but they were still kind of sensitive to the fact of being in this system where they offered things. And the meat to them became something that was an offense. It really bothered them. The people would even go and support the place, in the old word was shambles. The meat was given to the shambles. The shambles then, because it was meat that was the best quality meat, it was known for having the best quality meat. And so people would go there to get the best quality meat. Now, Paul will tell you, the meat's nothing. You can eat it. It really has no value at all for your spirituality. You're not a child of God because you eat or you don't eat meat. See, think of the broader picture here. What is the reason I'm a child of God? Is it because of my goodness and my rule following? No. See, the meat is nothing. So then he says this, though. But there are people who will legitimately be bothered by you eating that meat. And since we have the law of liberty where the meat is nothing, I want you to be thinking about them and their best interest. So I want you to adjust your life for them, even though the meat is nothing. You see, what we mess up on is sometimes we think it's the meat that we are prohibited from eating. No. He kept saying the meat's nothing. See, what he's saying is here, you have tremendous liberty because you did not come to Christ. We are in God's family because of our neediness, not our arrangement. You know, when you think about being a member of God's family, as I look at you guys, I don't know how many of you are actually in God's family or not. Because if you've tried to make an arrangement and be good enough and follow a bunch of rules, you're not in God's family, because that's not how he does it. I don't know how many of you have ever thought through the process of adoption, and I use this all the time, so I'm sorry, but it's the easiest one to understand. A friend of mine just adopted a child, and he adopted somebody from another country. And, you know, what was the qualification of that child? What made that child qualified so my friend would adopt them? Their neediness. No, there had to be something else. No, that was it. What she offered was neediness. She didn't have parents. She had no one to take care of her. My friend has four other kids. He's married. He could take care of her. So what he decided was this. I am going to use my resources and my life to go take care of the neediness that I see in this person. It's all my expense. Who's the guarantor? He is. Not the child. So what did this child actually do? Accepted the invitation to be a part of that family. That was it. You see, what we have to understand is I never did any performance thing in order to be a child of my father. One day I just showed up and he was my dad. It wasn't like I had to be good enough or anything else. So in essence, I could take rocks and throw them at your car and I would still be his child. Because that has nothing to do with being a child or not being a child. See, the law of liberty is very clear. The law of liberty is this. God Almighty loves Dave Wager. I will never be acceptable to him more or less because of what I do. I am only acceptable to him because of my neediness. That's it. That's liberty right there. So the rest of my life, am I trying to prove that I'm worth it? No. I already know that I'm not. She said, that's not the deal. There was a young lady here that went through our Nicolet Bible program, and she was here for the whole year. She was here in the summer, about 2 weeks to the end of the summer. She asked if she could meet with me. I said, sure. And she had written down some things, and she was so nervous she was shaking. She slid a paper over to me with some questions on it. And one of them was, I don't think I'm a real Christian. I said, really? And she'd been through doctrines. The whole works. I said, okay, let's talk about it. And she said, you know what, Dave? I read the Bible. I don't get anything out of it. I really would rather sin than spend time with God. Okay, I'm just listening to her. And after a while, I called her by name, obviously. I said, you know, can you tell me again what qualifies you for God's love? Can you help me out here? She said, my neediness. Yeah. I said, anything else? No. And like I said, well, you got plenty of that. Neediness stuff. He loves you. Do you want to be in his family or don't you? She came to Christ that night. Her life's been dramatically different since. You know, the sad thing is she went through all the classes, played the game, knew what to say, knew when to stand, knew when to sit. She grew up in the church. Her dad's a pastor. She knew the game. She knew it well. But she wasn't a believer. Because somewhere along the line, she didn't understand the law of liberty. She thought there was a law of law. She thought that somehow you had to perform right, you had to do right, you had to do things correctly, or God would... In fact, after she became a believer, she thought, well, certainly if you sin after you're a believer, then you're probably not a Christian anymore. And I said, really? Well, what made you a believer in the first place? My neediness? Who is it that will keep you in his family? You see, God has the resources to do that and the power, not you. It is God's guarantee, not yours. See, the law of liberty is very simple. Dave Wager does not do anything to qualify for the love of God except for accept it. That's all I got to do. It is God who does it all. I am the orphan. I am the one without help. I am the one that needs help. I am the one. And men, if you're sitting here tonight and you have never really understood that, or you're still trying to be good enough, or you're, would you please tonight, let this be the night where you say, man, I just understand. I'm going to give God my neediness and come into his family. And not only that, the young people that I deal with all the time, one of the things that's prevalent in the church right now across America is that people believing that if they sin or sin too much, then they're out of God's family. Really? So I keep throwing rocks at your car even though my dad tells me not to, I'm out of his family? I was never in his family because I behaved. I won't ever be out of his family because I misbehave once I'm in. Now we have to understand that. Now, understand and stay with me because all I'm at right now is the first law. There's three of them I want to talk about and they all go together. Okay? The law of liberty is the meat's worthless. Quit making something big about the meat. It isn't about the meat. Okay? That's the first law. My sin is there. It is not my goodness. You did not hear me say you should not be good. I'm just telling you that it's not my goodness. That it is God's goodness. It isn't my faith, actually. It's God's faithfulness. And if I had time, I could spread that out for you, but that's the truth. A lot of us start to believe that it's my faith that counts. I have learned in life that it's my Father's faithfulness that counts. You see, I am the most fortunate person in the world, and that the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Creator and Sustainer of the universe, he invited me to be in his family, and I'm his. And I have a Kuna Matata now. Because he's the one that takes care of me. Now, you may not understand that, but if you don't, it's because you're still trying to please God when you can't. The only thing that pleases God is when I come to him in truth. And I said, God, I can't do it. And he says, I know, man, but I can. I've got the resources and I can guarantee it. The little girl that my friend adopted is not worried tonight that she's going to be out on the street. Because my friend guaranteed it, that she'll be there. It's not her goodness, it's not her money, it's not her faith, it's not her actions, because she can give him grief right now. It's his faithfulness. It's the mom's faithfulness right now. That's what keeps that girl secure. We have to understand that. There's a law of liberty. The law of liberty is like the law of gravity, and there's another law called the law of love. It's important that you understand they work together. The law of love. But take care, 1 Corinthians 8:6, but take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged if his conscience is weak to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge, this weak person is destroyed, the brother for whom Christ died. What he's saying is, even though the meat is nothing, what if it is something to somebody? Are you willing to readjust your life so that they don't stumble? See, that's the law of love. The law of love is very simple. I am going to do what's best for the people around me. I am going to adjust my life. Let me tell you some practical things. I don't know if I'm right or wrong on some of this, but again, to be transparent, and this is how I try and work it through. I work with Nicolet Bible Institute students. I am over to my house a lot. I will not go to movies anymore. You say, oh, come on, that's legal. Whatever you want to call it, I don't care. The truth of the matter is, I do not want them looking at me going to movies. Because they are wasting most of their life doing that. And I am not going to give them any way, shape, or form authority for doing that. I don't have any DVDs in my house. Of course, I'm the guy that had the VCR still blinking. I never said it. And now there's no VCRs. So maybe I'm the wrong guy. But the bottom line is, you know what? If you come to my house, I have a small TV. I don't have a big one. Nobody wants to come over to watch football with me. I don't mind watching football, really. I'm not legalistic. I don't mind. It's just I'm making a statement to them. I've readjusted my life for them. I want them to see someone who doesn't do that. I won't drink any alcohol. I think the church today, alcohol has become acceptable, and I think they're wrong. I think the next generation will suffer tremendously because of it. Because we have given them the authority that it's okay. And they will drink, and the next generation already is. One of the greatest problems I see right now, without even going into the Bible, I'm telling you this, the greatest problem I see right now is alcohol-related. You ask people in law enforcement, you ask people in emergency services, you ask people in emergency rooms, what's the number one problem? It's alcohol that causes their grief. Do you think I, as a believer, am going to authorize that in any way to the next generation? I'm not going to. And you can say you're legalistic. Either that or I'm abiding by the law of liberty and the law of love. I will tell you, alcohol is nothing. You can be in God's family and have a beer. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you do that and you influence the next generation to do it and they go beyond what they should, then you, maybe it would be better that a millstone be tied around your neck and you'd be thrown in an abyss. Because of the fact that we are followers, and that's one of the things that's happening, is that they're following us and we need to adjust our lives for them. See, here's what I'm seeing we're missing in this law of liberty and love. I don't think we're willing to adjust our lives for people. Even if, because we're saying, look, the meat's nothing. Grow up, would you? The meat's nothing. We're telling them to grow up. You know, I had students who couldn't get math. I couldn't say, look, grow up and get it. I had to figure out how to get it to them. I had to adjust my teaching style. I had to adjust everything to try and get it to them. Why? Because the law of love demands it. What's really interesting is, you know, I have a friend who I worked with for many, many years who's just, you know, he's an alcoholic, and when we talk, he can't even go down the aisle at Walmart where the alcohol is. He can't even go down. You don't know how many Christians just about ruin this guy. Because they try and tell him, hey, man, you can't be so strict about it. Look, his marriage was ruined. His life has been ruined. He's been crawling down highways looking for lights to get in between. Would you stay away from him, please? And if you think alcohol's all right, would you keep that to yourself while you're around him? Because it's not helping him. He needs help in this. And so I need to adjust my life. I'm one of the friends he can come to right now because I say, I'm with you, man. I won't touch your stuff. It won't be in my house. You can come over. He said, Dave, you know, I can't do that anywhere else. I'm sorry. The church is missing something here. You see, because what we do in America is we grab onto our rights. That's what we do. That means nothing. I know that. I know the law of liberty. I understand it. But I also know the law of love. You see, I don't know if there's a law of lift or if that has to do with gravity. You know, I don't know. All I know, somebody out there smarter than I am, you can tell me what I'm talking about, but all I know is that the law of gravity goes with whatever gets the airplane off the ground. See, they go together. And the law of liberty needs to go with the law of love. Or we're in trouble. I think that if our generation would understand this, if we were to understand the importance of intentionally adjusting our lives for others, we would start to see something tremendous happen in the body of Christ. Here's why. Remember I told you we were sheep? We're like sheep. Sheep follow. The way God works it is very simple. That you and I are going to follow something, And that the way God meant for it to happen is for a mom and a dad to be and to live lives in a way that their children could follow. And I will guarantee you that whatever you do in life, your children will not only follow, but they will exaggerate. Because that's how it works. And every generation might exaggerate just a little, but then grandchildren, great-grandchildren, etc., all of a sudden you got a bunch of alcoholics in the family, you got a bunch of TV-aholics in the family, you got a bunch of something else in the family. Because of the fact that each generation expanded it just a little bit. And you're saying, so you're putting all this guilt on us or whatever. I'm not putting guilt on anybody. I am telling you how the law of love and the law of liberty work. You know, and the Apostle Paul, and I would love it, I would encourage you to go just look at that passage, because it's just really weird how he talks about it. It's like, no, it's nothing really, but don't touch it. And the last time it's mentioned in the book of Revelation, it's because people ate meat offered to idols and they were condemned. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's the meat that doesn't mean anything. Oh, you're right, the meat itself didn't mean anything. But when you start hurting people because you're exercising your law of liberty, you have violated the law of love and everything crumbles. I hope that makes sense. Because it's not laws like legalism laws. It's just laws. These are things that are, and we need to grasp it and move forward with it, if that makes sense. For though I am free from all, listen to what he said in 1 Corinthians 9, I have made myself a servant to all. There he goes again with this. This doesn't mean anything, but this is what I do. I am free from all. Am I going to be a child of God if I ignore you tonight? If I say, I don't give a rip about your life, I don't give a rip about any of you, I'm going home. I still be a child of God. But what if I adjust my life for you? That's what Paul's saying. Adjust your life for other people. Here's what's really weird. You know, God says things that are sometimes hard to grasp. It's okay. We don't have to understand him. He's God. He's right. If you live that way, you'll find out he's right. And the Apostle Paul says, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all. Why? That I might win more of them. I just really want to see them respond to God. And I want to be not an obstacle in their way. And I will do anything to get out of the way. Wow. Even give up the right of eating meat? Yes. The good meat? Yes. The good meat. Wow, that's a lot. I mean, you and I might have something else in there, I understand. But that was the context here. See, intentionally adjusting our lives. Now, you know, if you've heard me speak a lot, I'm constantly asking men, would you please intentionally adjust your life to find a younger guy mentor? See, intentionally do this. Don't just say, well, I hope it happens. No, intentionally. Like, I would love to see men from a church like yours go and talk and say, could we work out finding young people that need help? You know why that's so important to me? I was talking earlier with Bill about this, actually. My dad was a guy who's... My grandpa was an alcoholic, and my dad didn't have somebody to mentor him. And my grandpa was gone a lot of time. They didn't know where he was for weeks. And you know, this lady got my dad to go to church somewhere. I don't know who the lady was. I heard it was an old lady. And he came to Christ. And at that church, there was a youth pastor and a pastor who took an interest in my dad. And they mentored him. That's where Awana Youth Association came out of. That was Art Rohrheim and Doc Latham. And my dad became like their son. And this camp is here today, and I am here today because of the faithfulness of two guys that said, we will take on this kid. Intentionally, by the way. This is not going to be an accident. Where do you think Awana came out of? If you know the original WANA program, not today maybe what it is, but if you know the original WANA program, it was all about meeting with kids, teaching them the Bible, mentoring them. That's what it was about, kids off the street. It moved to more church group kids and that kind of stuff, but really originally, it was for kids off the street like my dad. And Art Rohrheim, he's about 95 now. We still talk. My dad's been in heaven for over 20 years, and Art still is one of my heroes. See, he changed everything about our lives because he changed everything about his life for my dad. He didn't have to do that. My dad was this punk fighting kid from the inner city of Chicago. What's the chances of him turning out anyway? His dad was an alcoholic. His mom was pretty much helpless. What's the chance of him making anything out of himself? I don't know, but Why don't we adjust our lives so they could? It worked there. By the time he died, he had started two camps, started two schools, pastored a church for 30 years, taught at New Tribes Bible Institute. Somebody mentored him. And while he did that, he was mentoring me. And there came a day where he came to me as a son, and he said, "Son, I'm going to trust you with this ministry." Whoa. He readjusted his life for me. It's interesting. Today, I think it's very hard for us men to understand the importance of rearranging our schedule for somebody else, to make sure that their needs are met, to make sure that we are not offensive in any way, to make sure that the habits in our life are things that they can follow. You say, "Well, I would have to give up this." Maybe so. But we need to understand that. Now, you know what? You could do it and say, "Okay, what are the rules? Just give me the rules." I don't have any. That's the traction part. It's going to change all the time. If you came up to me and I realized something, you know, in your life, and I'm going, "Oh, man, you know, this would be offensive to you," then I'm going to drop it. I'm not going to do it anymore. Why? Because you're my life. You say, "But it shouldn't be." Maybe they need to grow up. I remember when people started to move away from understanding this, they said, "Well, yeah, I heard that offended stuff. It's about time people just grow up. They use it." Fine. And you know what? I think they did. I think there were times, I remember one older lady in our church, that she would sit in the back, and every time they sang a chorus, it wasn't modern music back then, it was from hymns to choruses. And we sang a chorus, and you go, "I'm offended." And I thought, "Grow up." I was a kid, though. Now, you can use this offense thing to control things, too. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is there's legitimate offenses. Here's the problem with it. You got to be pretty perceptive to see it. Because really, somebody's probably not going to tell you that you just threw them under the bus. They're not. I don't know how many young people have struggled because they went to church, they went to a youth group, some girl went dating some guy, and she just struggled with all these unsaved guys trying to par and all this sex stuff. And then she got the same thing. You see, we don't adjust our lives for anybody. We're the porridge people so often. But the law of liberty will state that the meat is nothing. The law of love will state that I'm not going to do the meat because I care about you. And that's important, and you can fill in the blanks with other things. There's a third law. I call it the law of expedience. The law of expedience. You know, I don't know. You could put another word in there, I guess. And I'm Dave. I'm not God. I'm just making things up. And actually, I'm not making it up. These are actually three laws my dad sit down and taught me when I was young. He taught me that I had liberty. And he used these words. And he taught me that I needed to love and adjust my life. And he taught me that there was a good and a better and a best. And that I needed to choose best. And he used these laws. And now that I'm 57, I'm looking at him going, "Yeah, that's right. That's how it works." It's like the law of gravity. It's just somebody that noticed there's gravity, and we have to respond to it. Well, there's liberty. We have to respond to liberty. Responsibly, with love. The law of expedience, come now. Who say today or tomorrow, we are going to such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. Whoever knows the right thing, what's the right thing to do? The mediocre thing? The almost right thing? No, usually there's a right thing to do. And for those of us that know what's right and we refuse to do it, that's sin. Now again, is that pretty broad? Yes. I love to just, you know, pretend that this doesn't exist in some areas. You know, like, for me to know to do right when it comes to exercise or eating, or does it apply to that? I don't know. I don't want it to. Doesn't this apply to like real big things in life? Well, I think what happens is it applies to life. You and I know that we always will have bad, good, better, and best choices. I mean, that's what's going to happen. I wish I could tell you that I always know what's best. Sometimes I don't know what's best. If God says that, I might know. I mean, I know what's best in marriage. I know that 100% faithfulness is best. I know that I should love Linda like Christ loved the church. I know that stuff. I mean, that's what's best. It's outlined. It's very clear. Here's what's best. So if I'm not doing that, well then, okay, I'm not doing what's best. And I can expect problems because I know that. There's other things that we don't know what maybe best is. Like food or like something else. We're not sure. I do know this, though, that my God certainly knows. And what I need to do is be a man that begins to look at life, and instead of being satisfied with the way things are, and instead of being satisfied with mediocrity, and instead of being satisfied maybe with my passiveness on something, maybe I need to say what is best and keep working at it. When I taught school, again, I go back to that illustration, you know, I had to start thinking, okay, what's best for these kids? What is the best way to reach them? Half of them, back then, ADD wasn't really around. I was the first guy who ever had it, so it all stemmed from me. And then what was interesting is, you know, I found out certain things. You know, in my classroom, actually under the desks, I moved them away one day and I put a four square. I moved the desk back. And when things got tense, I told the kids, clear the desks. We got 10 minutes of Foursquare. And you know what? They learned better if I did that. The teacher downstairs hated it. But they learned better. You know, I used to have days of grace, believe it or not. I thought, you know, God, if I can't preach the gospel, I'll give them the words. And I don't know about you, but sometimes there's hopelessness that sets in because you're so far behind and you wish you could just clean it up. And so every once in a while, I'd come in and go, today's the day of grace. And I go, that means starting at ground zero, everybody. You know, all the work that you're behind, just forget it. And they go, and all the teachers have my heart attacks. You know, how are they ever going to learn? You know what? What happens after a while, you got to start, again, adjusting to your environment. What happens after a while, we all know, people get hopeless. They got so much to do, they can't do it. They don't see a way out, and they quit. I need them to not quit. So I gave him days of grace. And I explained what grace was. I explained what mercy was. I talked about camp a lot with them. And I could never give them information because it was a public school. But they would come to me and say, can I have information? No, your mom has to write a note. Do you know that I used to get half the kids that come up to camp with me? And they came to Christ. You know why? Because I could be just a good teacher, but I wanted to be the best. See, I learned that law of expedience thing. You can just get by just teaching math, I know. You can get by without the four square thing. You can get by without doing anything controversial. You can do that. But in my case, with those kids, it wouldn't have worked well. Yes, it was difficult at times. Because the principal would come in and say, what are you doing? And I'd say, well, releasing tension or something. And he would shake his head and walk out. But you know that my kids average 2 to 3 years growth every year in their subjects, better than any other class. Well, fair it is, they were way behind. They had a lot of ground to make up. But you know, it's very important that we don't settle for things we shouldn't settle for. I am not saying that I did not reach all the kids. I had some of the kids that didn't learn a thing. When I left, those kids caused me to go to tears because I could not figure out how to reach them. That's okay. Because what we do as believers is we operate by the law of liberty. You know, I wasn't going to jump off a bridge because of it. I understood. They have their own responsibility. I understand that. But I need to keep carrying. I need the law of love to kick in, and then I need the law of expedience. I need to make sure that I do what's best for them. Now, what's interesting is I didn't say what's best for me at this point. No, those three things are what's best for me. when I understand that I can relax in the fact that my God loves me, and not because of my performance or my goodness or anything else. When I understand that, and I understand that I live my life thinking of others and how I can help them, and I always try and look for not just mediocrity help, but the best way to help. I've learned that more recently. I think I do some things better than other things. However, I like doing everything. I have a weird personality. I will try anything and like it. But I've had to narrow it down and say, here's what I do best. And I need to spend time doing what I do best, if I'm going to be best use for the people that I minister to. And sometimes those are hard decisions, because you're giving up like some meat or something, or you're giving up something you really enjoy. But in the end, what you find is God gives you life. See, if we have arrangements with God, it doesn't work. This stuff doesn't work. We're trying to make arrangements, you know, rules, here's how we work it. It's not how it works. This relationship thing is relational. That's a good quote. Relationships are relational. Which means that we adjust to them. There are very few rules in relationships. But there is the law of liberty in relationships. And there is the law of love. And there is the law of expedience. So if I could simplify things, these are the three I want to live by. These three actually affect everything else in my life. Everything. But as Einstein said, if you make it where you can't explain it, then what good is it? So here's the three simple rules. And those three simple rules have been something that can grip my life and make it extremely significant and extremely secure, because I need to respond to them. The law of liberty, the law of love, the law of expedience. You know, some of you in here may not even be in God's family. I understand that. I want to tell you what I've told every kid that ever came through this place. I do love God, and I wish you would too. There is no hope without Him. There's no way to please Him by being good. There's no way to please Him by doing right. The only way to please Him is by saying, thank you. I accept your offer. And He does make His offer to you. Some say, well, that's a pretty narrow thing. God says there's only one way to the Father, and that's through Jesus. And it's not really so narrow. All truth is narrow, so that's not a big deal. And out of that, we practice that every day, every single day. When I go to Cops to buy food, you know, I might take out a nice pen I have and say, here, I'll give you this pen for this gallon of milk. And the lady at the register goes, we don't accept pens. Well, I think you should. Especially this one. It's a very good one. And she goes, I'm sorry, we have a policy. We only take, like, money. I think your policy stinks. I think you should take this pen. Here, I'm walking out with this milk. I'm getting arrested. You know why? It's because Cops has the right to say, here's what's acceptable. God has the right to say, here's what's acceptable. And guess what? You burning in hell is not acceptable. You being separated from God is not acceptable. Only Jesus is. And either I pay for my sins with Jesus, or I find an angry God someday who said, you did not do what I offered you. You did not accept what I wanted to give you. See, that's different. And what it is then is a relationship instead of this religious thing or these rules or anything else, because you've realized, God, it's all of what you did and not what I do. And now you can actually work the law of liberty, the law of love, and the law of expedience, because you understand it. Where those who are still trying to be good enough to God don't understand it. They don't get it. You know, man, I would love you to bow your heads and think for yourselves right now. Just think about you. If you're one who has never come to Christ, you have never become a part of God's family, could I invite you to do that now? There's a moment in history where you get it and you say, God, I thank you for your love, and I'm a needy person, and I offer my neediness to you, and I put my trust in your son. I accept your son as my payment. That's the payment that you accept. And I want to be in your family, and I accept that payment tonight. I invite you to pray that. God will hear you. And if you prayed that, I would love for you to make sure your eyes catch mine so I could pray for you tonight. If you pray that tonight, anyone else? Now, I want you to do me a favor too. If you looked at me tonight, would you please allow the pastors of this church to talk to you? Would you please go tell tonight so that you can? How many are up here? Is this just one pastor? Are you the only one here? Okay. Where's he? Okay. All right. Would you please talk to one of them tonight and say, you know what, tonight I think I got it. Would you just do that and let them talk to you so that you can have somebody just encourage you? Because if it's true tonight that you allowed God to be your father, there's a lot of stuff going on in the universe right now of angels going, very cool. Because there's another person that can live right. Because God didn't die. Jesus didn't die to keep you from hell. He died to give you life. And it starts now. And you need to understand it. And that's why going to talk to the pastors, plugging into a men's group like this in a church is extremely important. Those of you that are already believers, have you understood the three laws I just said? Would you commit at some point to adjust your life for the good of others? Would you begin to take a look at these three laws, the law of liberty, the law of love, and the law of expedience, and just working them out in your life? And realize that they're there whether you want them there or not, and see if that doesn't make a difference in the community in which you live. Some of us have not adjusted our life for anybody. Well, it's time that we do. And you'll be amazed how God uses that. It's not being legalistic. I hope you don't hear me say that. It's not a bunch of rules I'm asking you to follow. It's actually just responding to the laws that exist. Like the law of gravity or something. God loves you. He doesn't. If you're disappointed in God tonight, then you don't know him. You need to get to know him. He definitely loves you and wants you to have the life that you could have. He wants you to enjoy this life the way he made it, which could be tough, but it can be enjoyable too. And he also wants you not to fear death, because he'll be there for that. He becomes your father, and that means something. Father, thank you for the time we were able to share tonight. Thank you for your grace, your mercy. Thank you for not making it about Dave Wager and his goodness, but about your faithfulness and your love. I pray that your spirit keep working in our lives in a very significant way, so that the men of this church can be a bright light in the community in which they live, where they get a reputation for those who love you and love people, and they readjust their lives and their resources, their time, so that they are expedient in what they do. I pray your blessing upon this church and this group of men and their families. In Jesus' name, amen.
Hey guys, we're going to have a few announcements, and then this evening, we'll have a lot of free time. There is going to be a little bit of pod time.